Well, I was going through all these books I have in these bookshelves. You were commenting on them. You know, it's
Admiringly.
I think it was sort of my ideal state of finally realizing the bookshelves that I would see, at least remember seeing in my childhood. You know, I would go over, I went to, like, you know, science and math academies for, I don't know, junior high and high school. That would be grades, what would that be? Grades 7 to 12 till the end. And so consequently, the parents of my classmates, there were several of them who were, like, professors and, you know, regular smarty pants people. You know, not that my parents weren't as such, I suppose. But you'd go over to their house, and one in Austin, a fine house back then, would have wooden floors. So they would usually have wood floors, and there would just be, like, bookshelves everywhere, just always books. And so in my head, you know, having lots of finely curated bookshelves with books in them is sort of, it's you know, you've arrived. That's you're in adulthood, and you just need to watch out because someone might spill a bucket of blood on top of your head to put you in your place. Anyway, so I was cataloging them, and I have to admit,
Really?
well, I'll tell you what I was doing. Cataloging, I wasn't cataloging. Well, cataloging is the I went through and went through. I don't know, 5, 6 years ago, and when Goodreads was around, and I did actually catalog all the ones I'd read because they have a barcode scanner. I think.
Actually did the whole scanning
Yeah,
stuff.
yeah, yeah, yeah. And then even more, as they used to say, even more anally. I don't know what they say nowadays.
They do say that still.
Okay, I'll check in with them soon. But I often, whenever I would read a book, I would often write on the title page or the first page, like, my name, because, you know, you got to put your name in there, right? And then I would put the month and the year that I had started reading it, and sometimes finished. And every now and then I would write a little note about what was going on. And so when I was putting it in Goodreads, I could put in the year that I read it. So if you go to my Goodreads account, you can kind of get a sense of when I read stuff. Anyways, so I did that cataloging. But the reason I was going through them is you know, Kim and I are looking to just get rid of a bunch of stuff in our house, and just reduce the amount of stuff. And I realized, like, these books are great, but they're basically decoration now. And there's only one thing. This is what I was cataloging. There's only one thing that really is in these books that sort of is a what would you call it? It's a disappointment that I am setting myself up in the future. A known disappointment. That's kind of like a known issue, a known future disappointment. And that is that I have a lot of marginalia, if that's how you say it in those books. And some of those books, I just would, like, write random stuff on the blank pages. I remember one time, you know Charles of Drunken Retired fame. I used to write him a lot of letters, and I remember one time, I think it was the back of maybe The Great Shark Hunt, one of the Hunter Thompson books. I think I used 5 of the blank pages to write him a letter and just ripped them out and sent them to him. So anyways, I was going through trying to catalog all the marginalia with Scanner Pro, a fantastic app. That's what I was doing.
The marginalia, I think, is great. And there was when you were talking about kind of cataloging stuff, what I thought you were going to say was 2/3 of the way through the cataloging, you were going to stand up and say, "What the hell am I doing this for?" Because why am I doing this? Because there are a couple of things that that I found myself doing and having to kind of pay attention to what I was doing and think, "Hey, wait a minute, what's this for again?" And there are certain practices that I think, "Oh, right, I know what this is for. I know what the outcome is." And other practices that I thought, "Hey, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm only seeing it as an input to a system." And if I can get myself to think about what are the outcomes and then drive towards that, that makes me feel better about, scanning stuff in stuff. And marginalia is a really good example of that, of that's not something that you're going to get just by scanning books in. Scanning books in is like, well, okay, you know, another point or something like that. But the marginalia and the notes, especially Goodreads and Kindle, they've got really popular. I mean, people really like those. And the first couple of times I saw them, I kind of ignored it. I thought, well, why would I care what the most highlighted bit of this book is or what someone thought about this particular passage? And now it actually draws me to things more than anything else. It's a weird thing, actually. Instead of actual direct reviews of this book sucks, more like, you know, people taking those highlights and those quoted passages and pulling stuff out and making a little note about it, almost always makes me want to read more of the book. Mm. I don't know quite how that works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. The other stuff, like Huffduffer, is a good example of that. Huffduffer.com is Jeremy Keith's thing that he made years ago that's still going, which is basically tracking audio on the web, you know, like audio bookmarking. So they can bookmark bits of audio and it will generate your own kind of feed of audio, which basically, so it's like curated snips of podcasts. Absolutely fantastic. Hugely underrated and just keeps plodding on. I really do like systems like that. And Goodreads, I suppose, is another example of that. And really nice to see people picking stuff out, which I can't think of any other place that I can find that. A kind of nice voice to listen to.
But, yeah, you know, I haven't actually looked at the quote excerpts in there. I tend to ignore that kind of thing. But that, you know, I will go look up quotes every now and then. I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a very like, this is like something that happened last week. I have a very like conflicted feeling about, I don't know what to call it, in about getting the crowd involved, like, and here's
yeah.
I think maybe I discovered there's some cracks in my reasoning last week, but there's three things. One, I don't like call-in shows, right? I don't want to hear what the worst is. Like, there's the show they have on some public radio channel where they will have the panel of, you know, I'm putting this in air quotes, experts on whatever the topic of the day is, which is inevitably politics. And they talk for about 10 minutes and then they take calls from people. And it's just nauseating. Like, I don't like that.
I'm out.
That's right.
Cheap or something.
And then you have,
let's hear what some dumb schmuck thinks about this.
Exactly. And then you have the sort of like, you sort of have like the audience participation at a conference where it's sort of like the mildest form of this, though I think the most annoying is raise your hand if, and I'm just always like, people really like to do that. And I feel like there must be some sort of how to give a presentation post in Medium that's like, you should engage the audience and also figure out what topics they want. A thing like this would never say figure out, but also ascertain what topics they want by asking them to raise their hands. But man, do I hate that. That's terrible. And then the next one is
I'm just fuming. Carry on.
And then the next one is the I don't know, like it's a, I'm gonna combination it. It's sort of like crowdsourcing things. And the one that I always have found the most odious in my line of work is the unconference or the open spaces, where you're sort of like you're sort of asking a crowd of people to come up with topics, and then like sit in inevitably a circle of awkward chairs, and they discuss that topic. And then your Goodreads once is kind of an example of that. I always turn off the popular highlights in Kindle. And, you know, it's not so much, what's something between orthogonal and related? It's, I don't know. You know, it's a little 45 degree angle. Tangential. There you go. Tangential is like, I find it distracting. Like I don't want to see the popular highlights because I feel like it's going to get into my brain. And even if I didn't like that, make me think I like it. But anyways, the thing that changed all of that, or not changed all of it, but to put some cracks in there, is last week when I was in Dallas at a pivotal event, my assignment was to MC the whole event and then also run the open spaces each day. So you can imagine with that long layup how thrilled I was for that second part. But it turned out pretty good. Like people came up with topics and they seemed to be, I didn't actually participate in the discussions. I didn't go that far, but crowdsourcing seemed to work out in that time, which was nice.
What was your, did you have a third thing? I thought three things.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Conferences.
I did. It was, let's see. It was, I forget the first thing now. It was like raising your hand. I don't like that. And call-in shows, raising your hand, and then sort of crowdsourced things like in person. Now, I guess oddly enough, like if I go to Pinboard or like Huffduffer or Nuzzle or all those things, like I am interested in like what people are interested in. I don't know what it is. It's some sort of like authorial arrogance where I'm just like, I'm not interested in what the crowd is interested in. Like next thing you know, we're guillotining people.
But I agree. And I have things. So conferences, that thing of calling out to like 250 people, hands up if you love containerization or something, is madness.
Exactly.
Also, I've been to things like that where I've thought to myself, hey, wait a minute, I've paid money for this. I want to be there getting this stuff, like, you know, in the Matrix, you know, I know Kung Fu. I want, Simon Wardley or whoever to stand up there and just give me a blast of stuff that I need to keep really checking out what he's talking about and writing stuff down as quickly as I can to get my money's worth. Maybe I'm just a really mean person to think I should just be getting the insides of people's brains for that kind of money.
Yeah.
The open space thing, I remember open space stuff years and years ago, and it felt like open space meetings worked where it was a relatively small group of people who were already engaged broadly with the subject. So if you had an announcement like we're going to have this meetup about, I don't know, the indie web, and there's like 60 people coming and it's going to be open space and people know like a week in advance, they're already primed. And where it worked well was where everybody knew how it was going to work and everybody came kind of, they already had their stuff. So all that kind of open space planning with the big puts of paper and write down what you're going to talk about and all that sort of stuff in small groups, when people knew how it was going to run, it did work, but it reached a sort of number and I don't know how to explain it really, a dilution of subjects, and then quite quickly kind of fell apart, I think. The crowdsourcing stuff is interesting. It's interesting in particular that you talked about Nuzzle and Pinboard. Nuzzle for me doesn't seem to work very well. I know people for whom it works really well. Pinboard for me works very well. A Pinboard, and I think it's because Nuzzle is based on Twitter.
That's right.
So the stuff I'm seeing is going to be basically very widely disseminated. Pinboard, I mean, it's known, but it's not widely known. People use it basically as mostly reference. So following accounts in Pinboard feels much more sort of looking over someone's shoulder while they're kind of flipping through a Rolodex or index cards. But basically, if the answer is Twitter, you're asking the wrong question, I think, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think, well, at least for myself, I don't know about you, but the what would you call it? The sampling of people I have in those two are much different. Right. Like Twitter has all sorts of, as I would say, normals in it. Right. And it also is an outlet for, talking about normal things. So when I go into my Nuzzle stream or whatever you would call it, there will usually be like, let's say 25% of it is just like some technology thing about some cloud stuff. you know, raise your hand if you love containerization, and which is fine.
Yeah, I think
in my professional capacity, it is great to keep up with that stuff. And then the rest of it will just be like, you know, whatever dumb shit is happening in the White House this week. Like, it's just pretty much all of it. And then, so for example, for the past week or so, it's been all like, you know, we should draw and quarter Facebook. Who's going to go first? Sort of stuff. So it does tend to over rotate on the normal stuff. Whereas, to your point, I think in Pinboard, it's just nerd stuff pretty much. It's not like the non-nerds use Pinboard. Like, were you ever one of those people who was trying desperately to get non-computer people to use like Delicious, and you were like, but tags?
No. You credit me with far too much gregariousness. I never convinced to do anything. If in probably opposite. I mean, if people saw me using something, they would think, "Well, that must suck." Mm. So let's avoid that.
That's right. Once you tell people they should, figure out tuples and RDF, they're never going to listen to your recommendations.
But interestingly, stuff like there were. Do you remember Konnotia? And there were a couple of other things like that, which were supposed to be. Kind of specialist academic, maybe it still exists. Sorry. Pinboard's a pretty good replacement for that. I mean, it was flaky for a time when Maciek was thinking maybe he needed more than like one server or something like that. But now it seems pretty good. I like Pinboard Notes as well, but I keep wondering whether he's going to bin that whole idea.
Yeah,
I should do more. I like Pinboard.
Yeah, it's very nice. Now listen. I know you. Don't let this make you delete everything you've ever published on the internet and just start publishing the Pinboard Notes.
I'm so close. You're like a mind reader.
I think you've reached
that's the same thing over and over again.
You reached a stable equilibrium with this whole microblogs thing. I think that's fine. God. You're doing all right there.
Honestly, you read my mind. Okay. Right. Talking of pinning me down, I'm referring to your expertly curated Google Doc here.
Mm.
And what the hell is that photo?
In usual fashion, let me take 15 minutes to get to a 2-second answer. But I was, as happened last time when we were recording, anticipating our recording here, I was thinking like, what should we talk about? What topic should we talk about? And so I just noted these down, we'll go all into you ever read that blog, The Setup or whatever? I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, man, that's
a great one. There was a really good one yesterday from someone who was... He was some kind of like made a lot of money, obviously, or he made enough money for a single person to survive by selling some company early on. And he was one of these millennial nomad types, I'm guessing, where he was all about the gear he has in his bag. And it was fast. He's very detailed. Anyways.
Yeah.
So to be all set up-y, in drafts, you open up the drafts, you write these things in there. And so I was thinking last time I just opened up with this just like, I don't know, blast of topics we could talk about. And I was like, ooh, I'm always trying to come up with different formats. Every week we could just have a topic blast where I just read through a bunch of random stuff and we pick that or nothing else. And so all the stuff in here, last week I was all like, eating too much. I even went back and wrote in here the ones I did last week, can't wear red pants. History of computers. What is the point of existence? Anyway.
check.
And, part of the fun of such a list is like the crazy juxtapositions that you have. So.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I've heard you on like proper podcasts, and you've got a proper podcasting voice, and you're all sorted out and everything. And this is not that place. This is a place, different thing.
This is a safe space. Everything's fine. Yes, it's a safe space.
Nobody listens to this. I mean, we've got the numbers.
That's right.
So it's fine.
That's right. That's right. So one of the things I wrote down, yeah, you know, just random thing that popped into my head was, well, actually, it's because I was listening to the most recent Roderick on the Line. And as they often do, they made reference to what I think is perhaps the best Mr. Show skit ever. Which is it's called, I just went and watched, and it's called like Miracle Inventions or something. And famously in it, someone says pans can't talk, and so it's like this infomercial. If you click on the link, you know, maybe because you have a weak connection, you don't want to check it now. But it's like an infomercial in the style of those '90s infomercials where, you know, there's this miraculous thing that's a pan.
And it
becomes, in true Mr. Show fashion, a pretty dark comedy towards the end there. So, in going to watch that video, I excerpted a still, and this is the still in which our feisty new British colleague Ernie, who's the guy in the red hair, inexplicably is imploring, I think, Nancy the homemaker. He's saying, listen to this pan. Listen to this pan, because he wants to make the point that the pan's quiet.
Yeah.
So that's what that is.
I'm glad I asked.
Yeah. As you typed in, yes, it's called uses this, not the setup,
uses
right?
This.
Yeah. Yeah. That's...
No, I think you're right. I think there's more than one.
Mm.
Because there was one which was like really old. And I think this has been around for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And because it has people saying how much they like their titanium power books and stuff like that.
Ooh,
so that must have been going some time. Mm.
No, you're right. There you go. Uses this. Well, oh, it's this guy, Leonard Lynn. He's the guy I was making fun of. I wouldn't call it making fun of. Ah, look at this. And before that, I co-founded upcoming.org. Oh.
Wow.
Upcoming.org.
Which has been resurrected.
Mm, really?
Yes. Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, upcoming.org is there. It looks pretty weird, but it is there. I think he's still working on it.
Huh. Well, that's nice. I can finally figure out which conferences to go to if I want to talk about microformats. That would be great. So,
which you do constantly.
Oh man, I'd love to talk about microformats. Are you ready for my topic blast? I mean,
I am looking at it right now.
I spent a lot of time going over this. Now let me. There is one meta thing that I thought about with the topic blast. I know that conversationally I can be domineering. So I don't want my topic blast to blast your topics out of the water. These are just
no.
It's mostly for comedic effect. And so, all right.
I know what you're like.
So for April 9th, 2018, here's the topic blast. Mentally tired, which autocorrects to tiresome. Reliving your life, conscious of who you are, remembering your history, which I misspelled your history.
Your history.
And this was the, for some reason last night, I had that fantasy, you know, that going to bed fantasy where you're like, what if I went back in time into my, like, I figured it would need to be like your 5 or 6 year old self, because you don't want to have to live through pooping on yourself. Like, I went back to maybe my 6 year old self, but it was with my current mind, knowing everything that I did. So you got that sort of just thought train there.
You'd really brush your teeth.
Exactly.
That's what I would do.
And then as I was thinking about that, I realized that all these things that I wanted to do, right, in order to make things better, I could actually do them now. And, you know, as long as it didn't interfere with, like, the web of the current life and constraints that I had, which I thought was a positive spin on that escapism. Let's see. I can't think of any topics I'd write about for a culture column. And I put culture in quotes. And this, like I used to read this column in the local free paper called Letters from 3 a.m. And,
God, that sounds dreadful.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think the problem is that I'm not properly calibrated for, like, what people would read in a general interest culture column like that. Like, I feel like I have topics I would write about, but I don't know if that would work. So then the next topic, despite that, I am a writer, I've realized. Not like the type of writer I wanted to be when I was 14, but you know, I write things and I get paid for them.
You do,
And people tell me that it works out well. So ergo, I must be a lighter. I mean, a writer. And next topic, learning to yell at people in a healthy, constructive way. And then,
oh boy.
And then the next one, pans can't talk, which we have discussed. And then next topic, why doesn't Robert drink alcohol? Obviously you drink, otherwise you would be dead. Should Cote not drink? Next topic, how to deal with grumpy people, which is what I'm writing for my register column this month. One day, my dad woke up and decided he was retired. So, do happy people ever become Buddhists? Would you call Neil Gaiman style gothic? Where's the line between the comedian, which, you know, from The Watchmen, and learning to laugh with life? Mm-hmm. My problem is I don't do that review part of GTD, which is related to something. I think it was either Josh Whedon or the other one who's like him, who, like, you know, works on rewriting the Avengers and all the Star Wars movies. There's a J.J. Abrams, one of those two. And I remember he had an interview where he said he had this phrase about how you just keep going. Like, someone asked him the question, like, how do you do it? And he's like, we always keep the tanks full, which is to say, you know, you've always got some content. So then I've only got two more here. I think I finally figured out how to use Evernote 10 years later. And then finally, am I a cartoon of myself? Probably fine. So there's your topic blast for this week.
Right. Okay. I'm going to answer all of these.
There you go. I like this format.
It's like chess boxing or something. Do you remember chess boxing?
Oh yeah, chess boxing. And there's not even a copay for this visit. It's great.
No. It's straight in. Mentally tired. I think mentally tired is particularly interesting because my take on this is, my view of being mentally tired is that I've been thinking about the wrong thing or thinking about the right thing too much. It's not that I've just been thinking too much or I've been, you know, there's nothing in my life which is difficult or complicated. I'm just an incredibly easy life. So I do get mentally tired, but it's because I've just been doing it wrong. Reliving a life. Oh my God. I don't think about that at all. I don't think about the past at all. I don't think I've got about a 2 hour at the moment window of how I see things, which is pretty weird. But realizing things you could do now. Something changed in the way I thought about this recently, and there were loads of things I thought to myself, wow, I could really do that thing. I could build that thing. I could make that. I could record that and all that sort of stuff. And I thought, wow, this is going to sound bonkers, particularly for me. I thought, what could I do that would make someone else, like, dislike me less? Or what could I do to, like, help someone out or something like that? What if I just took all of those things that I thought of as projects that I could do and just, like, just put them in a pile and then just ask someone else what their project was and then helped them do that? Because of that pile of projects, I could do one or two or three or four of them, and they might not be that meaningful to anyone else. They might not eventually be that meaningful for me. But if I just ask someone else, hey, what are you doing? And I can help them out with that, I might as well do that, because they're all much of muchness, really. Topics for a culture column. It's just hilarious. The 3 a.m. thing sounds like a kind of fever dream. Can you imagine being woken up at 3 a.m., shaken awake, and given like an Apple Pencil and an iPad? It's
like you have a deadline. You have to write this.
Whatever you're thinking now. Now, people would read that.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that's got a lot to do with audiences. I keep coming back to this whole thing of what's the goal, what's the audience? And you described it as general, like a general audience cultural column. You need to put a big red line through general audience. Never, ever go for a general audience. Just say what you're going to say and the people who like it are going to like it. The people who don't like it are not going to like it. I mean, it's that. I think that's, you know, audiences are almost always self-selecting. I think. I have a question. What did you envisage as a writer when you were 14?
Well, you know, I read a lot of Hemingway. So I think mostly not so much, but the sort of lifestyle of a writer. Cause if you have any interest in writing, you quickly read, like, you know, you're not just going to sit around and sipping coffee. If you do that, you're going to end up having newspapers for shoes, essentially. Yeah. So, but it's more of like writing fiction. Right. Like I think that's how you go into this stuff is you think it's going to be fiction. But I clearly, maybe some of the competitors of companies I work for would say I wrote fiction, but technically it is not fiction, nor is it, you know, like books or things like that. It's copy, so to speak. I mean, that's putting it in a self-effacing kind of way, but it's of a different category than what one would think about.
Yeah, but it does actually have it shares something with the point above, really. It's that idea of a particular person's voice kind of couples with a particular person's audience, I think. You know, I read a lot of the same writer over and over again because there's something wrong with me. But I do like particular voices, I think. And I think people kind of underestimate how valuable individual voices are, just for being voices. And, you know, for the way particular people write and particular people put themselves across, people like that. I mean, I would probably listen to almost anything that Federico Vittici broadcast as a podcast. I mean, I am not that into like computer games, and I would listen to him. I do listen to him burble on about computer games because I like the guy. I like how he talks. And it's not like I'm suddenly dashing out and getting a Nintendo Switch or something like that, but he's a really engaging person. And, it's interesting that I don't think he quite realizes that.
I think all those independent publishing people, they fit into exactly the the mode of operations you're going over, and you know, to apply the old in lean manufacturing, we've got the five whys, and I think the core of what they teach you to be a therapist is the theory of infinite whys. They just keep asking until you like have some sort of mental breakdown, and then
collapse,
your time's up.
Yes. and next week.
And I think to apply the not so infinite whys, right? Like I think your rephrasing or your corrective phrasing is good. And it is like, I always have a continual desire to find a new audience, right? And somehow see if like stuff I would want to write about, it would fit a new audience in addition to the usual stuff I do. And then, so why is that, one might ask? And I think it's part of the reason I do like so many podcasts, and maybe a little bit of why, like, I'm sort of good on Twitter is like, I don't really think I've done a good day's work unless I've like published something. And to a limited extent, if I've worked on publishing something, right? Like at the moment, I'm trying to write a new version of my little pivotal booklet on digital transformation. And so I'm going through and like in-depth, like watching and marginaliaing a bunch of like presentations that people have given. And that's satisfying to do that. But like unless I'm like writing and publishing something, it seems like I'm not actually working. And so therefore, it would be nice to have another sort of like outlet for satisfaction. to like have a different type of topic to write to.
Yeah, partly I think this comes down to, in a way, consumer producer stuff. I often think of stuff that you write, and I think to myself, wow, wouldn't it be great if someone paid Michael to write, why should I care about two-factor authentication? You know, give me 600 words on why should I care about two-factor authentication, or, you know, my organization is choosing between Office 365 and G Suite. What does this mean to me? And that kind of less technical than most of the stuff you're writing, but not completely non-technical.
Mm. Yeah.
Quite focused, you know, like a kind of index card full. If you can imagine giving someone like half a sheet of paper and say, read this, and by the time you get to the meeting, you'll have the bullet points of, you know, everything's distilled down into your head. This way you should go this way rather than that way.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real big gap in the market there. And there's a load of people, particularly, as it were, above my grade, who can't really admit that they would really love to know what 2FA meant for them and the organization.
Those
and
people.
They're kind of not able to ask.
That's whether it's in the tech world or other world, those are the people I want to reach. I want to talk to them.
Oh, yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think that that point about learning to yell at people in a healthy, constructive way and how to deal with grumpy people, the key there is people. So as a therapist would say, you know, if you've got people in the sentence, then that shows a willingness to engage with the outside world, which I do not have. I don't have any willingness to engage with the outside world at all. I've had such disastrous experience in that area that, yeah, being healthy, constructive, yeah, I envy you even writing those words down. But, yeah, that would be great. retired? Are we ever going to be retired?
Yeah.
I can't think about that.
I don't know.
Happy people becoming – it's just baffling. Happy people becoming Buddhists. I was in the the place I work – and of all people, bumped into the Dalai Lama. I don't work at the same place he does, but he was just visiting, and he just said hello and, you know, smile to smile, and that question of, you know, do happy people become Buddhists? I always think, how does the Dalai Lama deal with really boring people?
Mm.
And, you know, how do you deal with, you know? How do Buddhists pay the gas bill? And are Buddhists nice to people? Because that question of, do happy people become Buddhists? I don't know whether they do. I mean, are you allowed to be happy when you're a Buddhist? I thought you were just like supposed to be so like even-handed about everything.
Yeah.
If you're not allowed to be unhappy, surely you are not allowed to be happy either. You just have to sit there. You know, completely equally looking at everything with an equal eye.
Well, I remember reading an anecdote in my little study break at the beginning of this year, where I was reading a couple of Buddhist things, and there's some anecdote of like some Buddhist student neophyte is like for some reason not eating very much, and you know, thinks that this is a good idea, and some Buddhist master goes to them and is like, you know, you need to eat. It's just like, never mind all this enlightenment stuff. It's important to eat, so you should do that. which is sort of like the paying the gas bill, right? It's just like, yeah, you gotta pay the gas bill. These are this enlightenment thing and paying the gas bill are orthogonal concerns, and you still have to do one of these other ones over here. But and you know, like the I think there are perhaps Buddhist people who are happy or content or whatever. But, you know, what I was more wondering is, like, if you are already happy and content, like, would you become a Buddhist? Or is it only people who, like, think something's wrong and missing that become Buddhist? Like, it's I don't really recall, like, ever seeing a path to Buddhism that's sort of, like, things are pretty, like kind of like the surfer path.
Things are fine.
things are pretty awesome, but I think I could make them more awesomer. Like, I don't think Bill and Ted would ever become Buddhists. They're just like, they're fine as it is.
Yeah. I suppose people come to life practices either because they are born into them, you know, you're born a Catholic or born into a Catholic family.
Or like your new friend, the Dalai Lama, like as first time he's conscious, someone's like, hey, you're going to be the Dalai Lama.
You're the Dalai Lama. Sorry, what? Hold this. Look into the mic. Look into the camera, smile, off we go. Yes. Yeah, the other thing is that thing of, hey, everyone's looking for something. Well, yeah, maybe people have also given up. You get to that stage. I get to the stage where I just think, oh, Jesus, I can't do this anymore. I'm not looking for anything.
That's right.
I've done it. Yeah. But, I don't drink at all. I stopped drinking alcohol about more than 20 years ago now. And I don't drink now because I drank enough back then. I drank a lot, actually, and I got into trouble. So it put me in environments that I wasn't best suited to. And I remember, you know, this is a very long time ago now. I remember kind of being at the dentist and having my teeth put back together again. And realizing that I had drunk enough to get into fights, which I, of course, would always lose. And a lot of my teeth were cracked. And I thought, oh, boy, I can't do this anymore. So I just stopped and haven't drunk a thing since.
Mm.
But I think both of those positions are non-optimal. Drinking too much and not drinking at all. Both not recommended, I think. I think that rather, you know, trite phrase of moderation in all things seems to be like a good idea. I mean, it does seem to be a good idea, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. As long as you don't overdo it.
Well, then it wouldn't be a moderation, would it?
That's right.
It just walks into that one. But I do have, drinking or anything, I do have a measure of not jealousy, but jealousy in a way of people who really enjoy something. Not like, you know, they really get a lot out of it. And I suppose I get a lot of stuff. I get a lot out of some stuff. But it's, you know, if I see someone order a friend of mine ordered a pint of Guinness recently, and I was looking at this pint of Guinness and thinking, I haven't drunk a pint of Guinness in 25 years. I bet it would be really, really nice. And then I thought, not nice enough. Mm. I'll let him do it. I'll enjoy it. And yeah. I realize there are a few things that I am not good at being moderate about. So I just don't do them at all.
Yeah, no, that's a good explanation. Yeah, I think there was some in the past couple of months, for some reason, I decided not to it's not like I sit around and get wasted all the time, but I decided not to like drink anything for 2 weeks, and like every day, multiple times a day, like I metaphorically saw that pint of Guinness and thought, oh, that would be great. But then it's interesting. Like there's a certain momentum you reach where like, you know, 10 days in, you're like, oh yeah, but it's been 10 days. So like, whatever. And then the thing you opened up with sounds, it's an interesting take on it too, which is like, oh, well, without the getting your teeth smashed in part, but let's just put it on the happy path of like, oh yeah, I did plenty of that. Like you go to a buffet and you're like, I ate plenty of the prime rib. I'm good. I don't need any more.
And also I don't, you know, like, I reached this age very early where I just thought to myself, it's not really, I don't have anything to prove. It's more like there's no one there for me to prove anything to one way or the other.
Mm.
So it's just, you know, whatever decisions I make, I don't really have to explain them to anybody because no one's that interested. I mean, after the first time of hearing, you know, are you vegetarian or something like that, it's like, well, yeah, once you get past 30, 35, 40, 45, it's like these things become far less interesting to people.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, but I would never recommend someone become vegetarian or something like that. I mean, it's people have to choose their own stuff. But
it's only college students who recommend that. Everyone else is on the level.
I don't tell anyone to do anything. I don't even believe myself. I don't expect anyone else to believe me. I have no trust. No trust in myself at all.
That's right. The opposite of a solipsist? What do you call this person who thinks everything is one of their dreams and they're the only thing that lives? So they have ultimate trust in their perceptions, but the opposite of that, someone who doesn't trust themselves. Like, I think I'm in someone else's dream. I'm pretty sure I'm not real.
I'm a figment of someone else's imagination. Definitely. Yeah. So speaking of which, you are definitely not a cartoon of yourself, which I think you're examining yourself a little too closely there. Mm. But the writing, I think is interesting because you were, you were recently doing a lot of writing of, is it like book length? I mean, there was a huge amount of writing you were doing recently, like chapters and chapters and chapters.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, well, that's the video research stuff. I'm always trying to write like a lengthy bookish thing. I think I've gotten up to 49 pages. That's how long I can write for so far. That's the peak.
Is that for one subject?
Yeah. You know, it's for digital transformation. You got to document how to do digital transformation. Come on.
Okay. All right.
and then the only other thing I've been trying to do is I was thinking of setting up a Patreon thing for this. I need to collect together all my like register columns and other little writings into one of those Michael Cote collected works, 2011 to 2018. Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
It'd be like a Dave Eggers moment. You remember, I think that was one of the first book he came out with was he was like 28 and he wrote a memoir. And every review was basically, this is a memoir from a 28-year-old who is 28. So I feel like the first thing I write should be an appreciation collection of one slice. It should be volume 3. Of my complete works. That's what I should call it. Cote's Complete Works, speaking Volume 3.
speaking of 28, is that really you in that photo in Instagram?
Yes, that is me. And the Florida Power thing? Yeah. There was spray paint put on my hair and stuff like that. There was a makeup person for that little magazine shot. Right. that wasn't so
like
long
ago. Pre-Photoshop.
Mm. Yeah, there probably was some Photoshop stuff. No, it was only like I think my son Cormac was alive, so it must have been like 7 or so years ago.
Wasn't that long ago?
Yeah.
Oh. So you're not branching out into modeling quite yet?
No. See, that was a joke that it was from my cover model. See.
And how long? Speaking of your audiences, how long are you going to be on tour in Jakarta? You're
a week. I'll be in Bangkok and then Jakarta, and it takes 24 hours to travel to and fro each leg. So that's a thing. That is some long travel.
Yeah, that really is. I do not envy you that.
Yeah. I don't know what to do about that. Business travel. Travel is a problem because it's sort of like on the one hand. It's a vicious cycle. You want to do a lot of it so that you get the good status, so that when you're doing a lot of it, you do it in style. But then you could also just not do a lot of it and then not have to put up with needing it to be comfortable. It's aside from my crystal clear explanation of it, it's very confusing.
Yes, and the my impression is that you have traveled quite a bit, and you know all about this air miles, all that sort of stuff. Do they just basically lay out a red carpet when they see you coming?
I'm not
because
quite
you a, must be like
I'm not quite at that level. I think I am at sufficient level where they treat me like a human with a, and they do it with a smile. So that is a special level of airlines and hotel status.
I see. Your usual seat. That's really nice.
That's right. That's right. I just get treated well. Yes, I think as I will quote in volume 5 of my collected works, I have traveled extensively in Concord. Which I think that's my favorite Americanism.
Yes, my mom works on Concorde, of all things.
There you go. Like the plane? She worked on the plane?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Not inside as a staff member, but she worked at the British building Concorde.
Ah, I see.
So there was a company in the UK called Elliott. Do you remember the Burroughs machines?
Yeah, like, of course.
Burroughs and Elliott and all those sorts of people. She was working there in the UK, and the French working with her. Yeah, literally the imperial units and metric units. And oh my God, can you imagine? The whole thing is just nuts. But she can't use an iPad now, so you know, she kind of sucks.
I was showing my mother how to move the Google Photos app to her home screen, which she wanted next to the camera. And she had a hard time because she had to cross screens. So she hasn't learned that thing yet of how you hold half of the icon hanging over the screen and it advances. Like she kept, it took me a long time to figure out, but she kept sort of like letting go. Even that's metaphoric. She kept lifting up her finger.
Yeah.
And of course the icon would go back and at first I was, as often happens when you're a computer person, with in a situation like this, at first I was kind of frustrated, like, why don't you get this? And then I realized as I said to her, I was doing the math in my head, I was like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of hard. I have like 7 or 8 years of practice doing this.
So you like me are an iPad Pro user. Mm. Have you worked out all the new iPad Pro hand gesture things, because I haven't.
You know, ironically, I don't get it. I keep wanting to like look them up, but it is because I have listened to Merlin Mann for so many years that I'm like, I'm not going to spend my time doing that. Despite that being exactly the person who would tell you should learn all the gestures, but it's just like I don't care.
Yes.
I know, whatever. Like it works fine, how it is.
I keep doing stuff accidentally.
Yeah, that's happened to me.
Yeah. I'm basically just double clicking at this stage on the invisible home button.
Yeah,
why is nothing happening?
I'm still learning how to deal with I figured out the split screen thing, and it's because the UI is deceptive. Like, so you know, you got your two apps side by side. You might have, as I often am doing, you might have a long form thing like a Kindle, and then you'll have like the good notes open on the right side, so you can take little notes or Evernote or what have you. And then you might want to resize it. And there's this mysterious bar with a little, I don't know what to call it. It's not a lozenge, but it's just a little nubby thing. And one would think you would push on that to be able to move it around, right? Hence it being there. But in my experience, that does not work. And I think what you're supposed to do is start there and kind of swipe over all the way, but not get focused on keeping your finger on that little line. But I don't know. It's touch and go, so to speak.
Yeah, I think I'm doing a lot of things in like 3 or 4 steps, which there probably is just one step.
Yeah.
So you know when you have something full screen and you bring something up, the dock thing at the bottom, and it sort of floats above, and then I think what do I do now?
yeah, that's difficult. That is, and then some things like will want to be an overlay versus on the side, and it's very it's very weird. But it's you know, I got a hardware refresh, as they say in the business, since I've been at Pivotal for 3 years, and I got a MacBook Pro, which has a touch bar on it. Now the sad conclusion, well, it's not a conclusion, the sad state of our story is that the screen doesn't work on it, just like flat out doesn't work, which is in doing all the wacky key combinations to like flash the Smack RAM or whatever. Like I discovered that you can turn voice over on by hitting the power button 3 times, and then it sort of like It's sort of like you can, you know, for better or worse, pretend to be a blind person and it'll read the screen to you. And so I was able miraculously to log on to my Wi-Fi, right? Put in the password and then also sign into my Apple account. Cause I thought maybe this would like add some sort of diagnostics that would be like, oh, what you need to do is hold down the 4 key while pressing the up and down arrow at the same time and then whisper into the microphone, turn on screen. And then your screen will come on. Cause of course I will do like 60 hours of work to avoid 2 hours of going to the Genius Bar. I tried. Anyways, but we'll see how that works out with the touch bar. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. The homework I'm going to set myself is to actually look at the iPad gestures because I'm just driving myself mad. It's like a Ouija board in there. It's tragic, really.
Yeah.
I look just tragic. I've got to find out what I'm doing because I'm just skating around aimlessly. It's terrible. I'll ask my mum. My mum probably knows more than I do on this.
Yeah, you just give it to her and she'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, grab it off me. I'll do it.
And then maybe more importantly, figure out the things you don't need to figure out.
Yes. Speaking of which, recommendations. Why you're not buying it? What's with all the Chemex shots?
Oh, you know, I don't know. Didn't you put a link to that somewhere? You linked to someone the minimalist kitchen thing, like someone.
Yeah,
I'm not sure why that came up, but then someone wrote it in our little Slack channel, and it reminded me of that, and I wasn't sure what a Chemex was, and then you go look at it, and that looks like a good lifestyle right there. I think I could get behind.
That is
nice.
I loved mine until it got broken. Yeah. I'm back on it.
Was this your coffee machine or your lifestyle?
Yeah, both. It's just the coffee machine had meaning. The lifestyle I'm realizing was empty from the beginning. But the Chemex can be replaced.
Yeah.
But the lifestyle can't. Yeah. But yeah, do you take any coffee things traveling? Or are you just like...
I used to.
Go down to the hotel bar.
I used to. Okay. This is another revelatory story about my... I forget how you put it earlier. My unwillingness to engage with people. But so I stay in hotels a lot. And your finer hotels will have in-room coffee. And your finer European hotels will have a Nespresso machine, which makes that big... that big noise. I always think of it as a George Clooney coffee because he did a bunch of Nespresso ads, right? And trying to
the pods.
Bring it to America or something. So you have the in-room coffee. Now, you don't always have the in-room coffee, and it's always terrible. Nespresso is kind of good, but we talked about this last episode. I think I don't like European coffee as much as American. So I used to have, what was the thing that was popular with the hipster that's like a big plunger in a plastic tube?
AeroPress,
yes. So I would take an AeroPress with me with some ground coffee, and you can usually get hot water in your room, or at least...
Okay.
Actually, you can if they have in-room coffee, you can usually get it because you just brew coffee without a thing in it. And then if you're traveling in Europe, they always have, as you would say, I think, a kettle in the room.
Yeah.
And so you can heat that up and have some coffee. So this actually wasn't solving for the case where you don't have a coffee machine in the room. It was just better coffee than what was available. So although I was thinking if you were really desperate, you could just turn on the tub's hot water and probably get water that was hot enough.
Oh my God.
Now this all gets to the jokey punchline of the thing. Why would you go that far? And that is because I just want a few cups of coffee before I have to deal with people. And going down to the hotel bar, one, you've got to get dressed, so that's a big deal, right? And then two, you got to like put some shoes on, and just all this kind of stuff. And then you go down there, and you got to like find the coffee or talk to someone, and I don't know. What my wife tells me is that what you're supposed to do, and she has, man, get a load of this. She knows how to solve a problem. She's like, what you do is the night before you order room service to the time you want. to get a pot of coffee. And I'm like, yeah, but then I have to like talk to people. And she's like, no. You tell them to leave it outside of your room. And oh man, that sounds like some fucking advanced science. But I just cannot believe that you can get room service without having to talk to someone. I can't make myself believe that that's a reality.
You're gonna have to try this. I can just imagine your hand coming around the corner, grabbing and just pulling the coffee in. Yeah. That's the way to do it.
Oh man,
because you're absolutely right. Because the thing is that I think to myself, well, okay, if I'm in a hotel, and I think to myself, imagine I'm in the Netherlands or something like that. And I think, wow, there's going to be a nice coffee place outside. But just, I mean, my God, by the time I get there, I'm going to be having some sort of collapse. The getting dressed and the shower and brushing it. I mean, no. It needs to happen in a different order. I'm going to follow Kim's advice. I'm going to try it.
Yeah, all right. Maybe, you know, I often forget that of all places, the point of a hotel is to do exactly what you want and nothing more or nothing less. Unless you're in Las Vegas and you got those bellhop people who want to get a taxi for you. Like, there's a few exceptions, but it's just like they will do whatever you want, which is, I should probably take advantage of that. But, you know, I don't yet, maybe hopefully it's not yet, but I don't have like a weak whiskey in the morning. But I feel like in the tradition of like Churchill and so many other people, I feel like the proper way to, and what was the name of the is it supply side, the big government economist of the mid 20th century? Like I think that dude was like this too. Is like, I feel like the first, let's say, 1 to 5 hours of your day should basically be just sitting in bed reading the news and maybe barking out some correspondence to people. But you know, you don't want to have to like emerge from your bedroom area. So you don't want to go out to a coffee shop at 6 a.m. in Amsterdam and see what's happening. But yeah. So I used to have a portable coffee thing, but it was just too much hassle. And also the coffee goes stale and like, you know, all sorts of, and you got to clean the thing. And then I should just order room service.
Yeah, I think there's that thing about it's a jobs to be done thing, isn't it? Mm. You know, if you can make reasonable coffee at home, make reasonable coffee at home. But the portable stuff, you've really got to be on too much. I can't deal with that. I'm not together enough to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless I visit my parents and then I need some coffee.
Yeah, yeah. And now, you know, if I was going somewhere long, well, is this the case? No, I don't think I would really ever. I pack coffee when I go camping because there is no other option. But other than that, there's you always got to bring your coffee when you camp. No coffee in camping. You got to pack it in and pee it out.
Oh my God! That's recommendation for the week.
That's right.
How do you make coffee when you're camping?
We use a French press. You get your French press ground stuff and you boil some water on whatever heat source you have, and then you French press it. And then you have to very, very carefully, we have a glass French press, so you have to very carefully beat out the coffee. We should get a plastic one maybe, but you gotta clean it up.
Yeah.
All right.
That was a great advantage of the AeroPress.
No, that's true.
You had kind of
that is nice. And we, you know,
logistically pump out this tamper thing.
We used to take that camping, but then the problem is like it's a single serve thing, and like Kim and I want to drink a lot more coffee, so we'll brew like the largest French press you can get that isn't cartoonish, you know, not the individual one, but the, I don't know, 4-cup one or something that you get.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should wrap it up. I got some sushi, rotisserie chicken waiting. A family.
That sounds fantastic. I'm going to learn about an iPad. It's going to be great.
That'll bank that up for our computer corner for next time. Gestures. How many fingers can I use?
Am I holding up?
All right. Well, we'll see everyone next time.